Oh, it's a first of its kind. I know it technically not, because when we were in the middle of that insane news cycle to start the year, we certainly went to 2 a week, didn't we, in the emergency form side of things. But this is the first in April, 2 show per week formatting is where we stand right now. And with that, welcome inside the collective on a Thursday night. It's the 9th of April. We're back for more. I'm Bobby Trossett, as always, joined alongside The Athletic's Jeff Zeribek and Cole Jackson of Road Graders. 2 weeks out, fellas, to the start of the 2026 NFL draft. And 1 week from today will be the unveiling of a massive day in Cole's offseason, the next flight. The
My offseason? That's Jay-Z's highlight. He's got it circled.
Honestly, guys, I almost put up the sheets behind me on the desk. Like, it was going to be like Cal Ripken 21-31. And each day that elapsed, another number fell from my desk. Till we get to that magic number of one, and we are there for this momentous day in Ravens history. Honestly,
Jay-Z has an advent calendar, but instead of Christmas, it's jersey release day.
I honestly don't know how I'm going to sleep the next week, guys. I don't know.
It's really coming up the 16th, not the 19th, the 16th, yeah. Coming up this week. And tonight is brought to you by our friends at Prize Picks. We'll tell you about them coming up in just a bit. And Cole, I think we have to stick with Masters theme, by the way. Spoiler alert coming up in a little bit. Zach Friedman has become a new channel member here inside the collective, as has Diesel. So some new memberships firing in tonight. If you guys want to do that, it's a great way to support the program. And obviously, there's some incentives involved for you. You see, as we set the table, what we have coming up tonight. Players spoke yesterday. Jeff, you were one of the several reporters in attendance for that media availability as the offseason program gets underway. Zay Flowers' future came up. He's entering year four, and all of a sudden you blinked, and he is extension eligible. We'll talk about that as it relates to Jaxon Smith-Njigba's deal that he got from Seattle last month and a whole lot more. Then Jesse Minter's pinpoint message that was shared to the team. Kyle Hamilton spoke about that a little bit and called a spade, that it's been below standard defensively over the last couple of years. And do we really need anything else besides topic three in terms of the teaser? Daniel Fa'alele, and in parentheses, it should write for Cole, and then we'll get to some Q&A along the way. Fellas, your thoughts, Jeff, starting with you, as more channel members come in tonight. There's some sort of run on channel members that's happening. Welcome, Nick Capecci. Is it Capecci or Capecci? But welcome to channel membership. We'll get to super chats in just a bit. But Jeff, your thoughts on the way Zay Flowers handled, as any probably agent would tell him to, and let's just go ahead and throw to it, and then we'll get your reaction on the other side.
You're going to start to get asked about your contract. How much optimism do you have that you can get an extension done here? And, you know, is that something you're thinking about this offseason?
I'll let my agents handle that. I'm excited to be back and meet the new coaching staff and just get back running in the facility and seeing everybody's faces.
Jaxon Smith-Njigba's new contract came out. There was a lot of talk about how it reshaped the wide receiver market. How much did it catch your attention?
Congrats to him, though. Congrats, he did that one. But I ain't really paying attention to it, for real. If I'm being honest, I go train every day. I let my agents handle that. Like, I don't talk to him in the week about, oh, yo, when we going to get this done? Like, I'm not talking about that. I'm just, when it come up, it come up. And that's when that's when y'all will know.
But is it your preference to stay here, though?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't want to go nowhere else.
The first of many, Jeff, that he'll be fielding as it relates to this topic. And this is sort of the Jaxon Smith-Njigba, the new bar that was set, if you will, earlier this offseason. But kind of a carbon copy blueprint there of how an agent would want his client to answer those types of questions.
Yeah, are you guys buying any of that he said? I am buying the part he wants to stay here. I mean, by all accounts, he loves it here. He's very close with Lamar Jackson. Him and Eric DaCosta have a very good relationship. But the rest of it, I think it's a little more of a pressing issue than – not a pressing issue, but I think it's a little more in the forefront than most players allow it to be. Now, I said this a couple shows back. Jaxon Smith-Njigba's agent, Joel Siegel. Zay Flowers' agent, Joel Siegel. So I'm guessing he was well aware what was going on in that situation. I mean, it's advantageous to have an agent who just negotiated the biggest deal for the receiver that we've seen. So, you know, I've said this recently. Doesn't sound like anything's imminent. I haven't heard anything's like far down the road, but I think when you see these situations like this, when there's two sides motivated to get a deal done, and you know, usually you're able to reach common ground. And I think the Ravens want to make him a Raven for a long time. And I think Zay Flowers wants to be here and would prefer getting that deal done before he hits the fifth year option stage. But you know, doesn't mean, my guess is they pick up the fifth year option and that gives them some time to work on this deal. I wouldn't say it has to be a priority or pressing within the next couple weeks or months. That's kind of a deal you work on during the quiet period of the NFL schedule. If there is even a quiet period, it's that mid-June to mid-July period where players are on vacation and they're still training, but training camp is still a couple weeks away. And then, you know, you sort of go from there and try to knock that out then. So I still would not be at all surprised if they reach a deal, but I think we're a bit a ways from that for now.
Yeah, and I think the question has become, you know, where is the value of a Zay Flowers relative to a contract like a Jackson Smith Njigba? And we talked about this around the Tyler Linderbaum contract, right? You don't have to be the best at the position in the NFL to get paid the highest amount at that point. And I don't know if he's going to eclipse what Jackson Smith Njigba got, but he's going to get a lot of money. I think that's clear. You look at the last 2 years, back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons. The 1,000-yard marker is kind of changing a little bit, obviously, with the extra game added. But, you know, he had 1,200 yards and 5 touchdowns last year. The touchdowns obviously have been a bit of a lag, but I think the big thing, and I mean a lag in the sense that, you know, he's not putting up 8, 9, 10. He's kind of been 5, 4, 5 through his first 3 years. But when you kind of dive into it, you look at his efficiency. He was 5th in the NFL last year in yards per route run at 2.62. He was 3rd in the NFL in yards per team pass attempt. And I think that's a really important one because when you look at the design of the Ravens offense over the last 3 years, he has been a number one receiver, whether that fits your definition of it. He has been a statistical number one receiver on a run first team. This has been a team that has just, you know, prioritized the run game. That was one of the staples of a John Harbaugh coach team. Todd Monken stuck with it. We all know what Greg Roman did. That identity just has never left this team. So will we see that change? But even if you dive into some of the separation metrics, he was 6th in separation on targets last year. You know, he does a lot of that stuff. The big, you know, I guess counterpoint is he's just not the 6'2", 6'3", 215-pound prototypical X. And I mean, that's fine. For me, what gives Zay Flowers so much value is his ability to make plays in all four levels of the football field. I think that is what matters to me the most in terms of looking for a number one wide receiver. He is able to make plays in all four levels behind the line of scrimmage in the first 10 yards, 10 to 20 in the intermediate, and then 20 plus as a deep receiver. So I think all of that, my anxiety comes from the Tyler Linderbaum saga is when you let a guy get close to the market. And, you know, we saw them prevent that with Kyle Hamilton just last year when he signed, what was that, going into week one? It was right at the end of August, right? So
yeah, it was over the summer.
Yeah. And so, I mean, we still have a little bit of that that extension time as we go into the summer. But I think locking him up before week one is a very critical priority because a lot of these players don't want to get into contract extension talks when the season goes. And again, there's going to be that ongoing debate. Is he worth wide receiver one money? And you gotta pay to play in the wide receiver market. And do you want to go into a draft next year where you're expecting the Ravens to be competitive, to be drafting in the 20s, hopefully drafting 32nd, and need to get a wide receiver, which has been basically the story of the Baltimore franchise? I mean, I can't remember the last time we haven't needed a wide receiver in your top three needs. So that's my big thing. I would lean towards paying Zay Flowers. I think he's a critical part of this offense. I think he will be under any coaching staff. I do think he's going to fit extremely well in a Declan Doyle offense. So I'm all for paying them, and I'm just hoping they get it done so I don't have to stress like I did about Tyler Linderbaum.
You know what gives me anxiety? Looking at that graphic, seeing Garrett Wilson led the Jets with 395 receiving yards. And Garrett Wilson's a great player. Man, is that pathetic.
Makes you think of the 2005 Ravens. God.
But you know what, Cole? I think you summed it up perfectly. And I think in the media and fans, we have this habit of focusing or always adding what a player is not. And we've talked a lot about what Zay Flowers is not in terms of his dimensions. Is he the prototypical number one? How about we focus on what Zay Flowers is? And that's a reliable playmaker who makes plays on every aspect of the field, who hasn't missed many games, who busts his ass, who's best friends with the quarterback. How about we focus on all those things? You know, this is a team that frankly hasn't had a ton of flaws in franchise history and the way they do business, but they haven't been able to draft and develop wide receivers to save their lives. And yet they hit on one clearly two-time Pro Bowler, you know, moving forward. And yet there seems to be a focus on why they can't pay him, because this is what he's not. I do agree with the sense that you get yourself in trouble when you overpay your own players and you over-evaluate certain players and because you're desperate and do all that stuff. But Zay Flowers is the best guy he had. He's a top-tier receiver. He may not be in the top five in the NFL. He may not be in the top 10, but he is a top-tier receiver, a playmaker, and he's a guy that is critically important to this offense. I don't think you'd play name your price and just give him a blank check, but I think there certainly will be a deal to make. And guys, as we see every month, the receiver market is just getting bigger and bigger. And the longer you wait, the more contracts will go up. There'll be somebody that follows JSN and probably sets a new mark. And then you're chasing that. And then even the prices for guys under it go up further. So, I don't think it's something you need to worry about over these next couple weeks, over the next month or two. But yeah, I think it's something you certainly would like to get done before the start of the season and get ahead of it, like exactly Cole said, like the Kyle Hamilton situation.
Cole, you mentioned value a couple minutes ago. The fifth-year option value says that Zay Flowers would be worth for the 2027 season $27.3 million. And that deadline, Jeff, is just weeks away, May 1st. You fully expecting them to pick that up?
Oh, yeah. I think that's a formality. But usually when you have those conversations, that leads to conversations about a potential extension. You know, the Ravens are more a deadline team. Look, they didn't even confirm Lamar Jackson's fifth-year option was picked up until they had to do it. So it's not something they yell from the rooftops months in advance, but that's fully the expectation.
Yeah. And just to look at that $27 million marker, that's the fifth-year option that was predetermined by – how do they determine what's the fifth year? Is it like I know he got boosted because of his All-Pro nomination, but
the Pro Bowls hurt you, man. Those like it hurt Linderbaum, you know.
Like his AAV on an extension will exceed 30, so it's like 27. I know it's a big cap hit because it's a 1-year deal, but I mean that's cheap in terms of an AAV. So just to give you a sense of who's around that number, like you saw Jameson Williams. You know, he signed for 26.6 AAV, Devontae Smith, 25 AAV. So just a couple of guys. DJ Moore was 27.5 AAV. Again, they were a couple of years ago, so numbers always change. But, you know, I would take Zay Flowers over those guys. So I think that's how you have to kind of look at it, right? So then when you kind of look at who's in that $32 million marker, well, that's AJ Brown and Garrett Wilson. CDs at 34, but again, the time that you sign is so critical because you're always going to exceed the guys that already got paid. And when we talked about the Linderbaum deal, we knew it would exceed 21 million because Creed Humphrey's 18 million was signed like two off seasons ago, so you got to add the inflation on top of that. So I would expect him to kind of land in 33 to 35 AAV. I really don't think he gets up around 40, but again, I never thought Tyler Linderbaum would get 27, and here we are. So what do I know?
Another thing Zay spoke about yesterday is one of his peers, Devontez Walker. He will be a summer darling and maybe more. He's been that already as touchdown Tez, because the majority of his receptions in the league, albeit a small number through two seasons, have been touchdowns. He was a Kent State transfer to North Carolina, and then the Ravens selected him in the fourth round of 2024. Remember, there was that whole eligibility issue, too, that he dealt with at Chapel Hill. I believe Mack Brown fought hard for him and ended up having an excellent second half of the season. Ravens decided to take a flyer on him. And he really, from a usage standpoint, has been, for the most part, outside of scoring those handfuls of touchdowns, he's been a special teams guy or inactive guys the first couple of years in this league. He now finds himself as part of the puzzle piece, perhaps, to make a case this offseason and into the summer. He's 6'1", 198. Jeff, do you see him legitimately competing for Rashad Bateman's targets?
I think a lot still has to play out with that. I think, you know, who do they draft? Do they draft? How early do they draft one? Do they sign a veteran free agent? I'm guessing the answer to both those questions is yes. So then you look up, you know, you look at the makeup of the whole wide receiver room and see where he fits now. Sure. I want Bateman to get the ball. It's ridiculous to have the number of catches he had last year for a guy that's that talented. And I know a lot goes into it. There's some fingers to be pointed on many sides. I'm not taking sides here. But to say I want to take away targets from Rashad Bateman, no, I don't. But I also think there's plenty other targets to go around beyond Zay Flowers and Rashad Bateman. You know, Isaiah Likely isn't here anymore. Kohler isn't here anymore. You know, whoever they have as the number two tight end is probably not going to be as big of a threat as Likely was, or as guys leaned on like Likely was. So I'm all for Devontez Walker getting an opportunity to secure a bigger role in the offense. But I'm not all for it at the expense of Rashad Bateman, if that makes sense. But one thing I want to say, guys, is it's up to Walker, right? It's up to Devontez. He's a good kid. He's a hardworking kid. Just needs to be consistent. It's like a lot of the young receivers we've seen here. They light it up for a week of practice and training camp, and then they just disappear, and you forget they're even on the field. And, you know, or they'll have a mix in a really bad week of practice. Walker got banged up a little bit last year, and he struggled to kind of overcome that and regain his place in the offense. So with any of these young guys, it's just about being more consistent, practicing better, being more consistent, gaining the trust of the quarterback and the offensive coordinator, and then you go from there. But yeah, I mean, you really can't have it both ways. If you're begging for all these additional receivers, you also can't say, well, Devontez Walker needs to be more involved, because this offense is not going to get five receivers involved. I mean, how many times have we seen that movie? But yeah, I think, you know, we'll know how much or how they feel or about Devontez Walker and what Declan Doyle and Jesse Minter think and watching tape on him. And look, these guys can evaluate practice tape from last year too. It's not just, you know, the game stuff. So we'll know how they feel about him based on how much they prioritize receivers. Do they wait until the comp deadline passes and sign a Juwan Jennings? Do they, you know, there's a bunch of accomplished veteran receivers out there. I know Schefter was talking about the other day how all the big name free agent receivers, do they go that route? Do they happen to think about one at 14 or maybe with their second rounder? So I think all that remains to be seen. For now, sounds like Devontez Walker's in a good place, and he's in the building working hard and picking up the offense, and that's a good thing. He's a good-looking prospect, but he's still a prospect who needs to prove he can do it on a consistent basis. And they need to show the faith in him as well.
I think one thing I keep reminding myself is we really don't know a lot about what Declan Doyle is going to do from a personnel perspective. Like, we can draw assumptions from what we saw in his time in Chicago. We can draw assumptions from his time in Denver. But this is the first time he's controlling, implementing, calling his own offense. And it's tough, right? Because if you look at Sean Payton's usage last year. They used 11 personnel on 63% of their snaps. They only used two tight ends. They were in 12, 10.26%, 22, 8.7%. Not a lot of two tight end usage. But then you look at Chicago, 51% in 11, 32% in 12, which was up there as I think the second highest to the Ravens, who I think the Ravens were top in the league in 12 personnel usage with two tight end looks. So is Declan Doyle going to lead towards a Ben Johnson approach or a Sean Payton approach? And Sean Payton's had plenty of offenses in the past where he has used a lot of two tight end looks. And the reality is that Declan Doyle might not have a preference. He might cater it to who's on his team. So, you know, they could be an 11 personnel heavy team. It's really hard to say. And I think a lot of it will be determined more by the talent on his roster and what position it's at rather than it being, you know, I need to play two tight ends. So I think that's one of those underrated things that I'm not saying it's not going to happen. I think we don't know. And I think that's okay. Like, we just haven't seen Doyle step in and do this where we can, when Todd Monken came in, we could go through his Georgia tape. We could go through his time with the Buccaneers and look at how he's held tendencies over time. Can't do that with Declan Doyle. So I think it's going to be really interesting. Wide receiver is certainly not a need in my opinion. We've been burned so many times in the past where we do have a young wide receiver on the roster who has shown flashes, and there's no doubt about it. I mean, every time Tez Walker gets a target, he flashes because it's in the end zone. Can he do it on a consistent basis? Can he do it over 40 snaps a game? We just don't know, right? So on the offensive side of the ball, just based on where things are at and where the investment needs to go, I'd rather lead towards over-investing there. That includes with the offensive line, and that includes with wide receiver. It's going to come down to who's on the board when the Ravens pick. I would take a wide receiver as early as 14 and as late as their seventh rounder. I'm not going to turn down talent at any point. I just wanted to kind of put it out there because I just don't know what Declan Doyle's tendencies are.
Diesel 4039 gets us started in the super chat category, and he says, who do you think that gets the next extension on the roster? We opened up tonight's show talking about the now eligible Zay Flowers. Doesn't appear to be any crazy level of urgency there, Jeff, as you noted earlier on. They got Travis Jones done in season. They got John Jenkins done for depth in the interior in season. They got Nick Moore done in season from a long snapper perspective. Trey Hendrickson was the big splash in free agency. Lamar's the elephant in the room. Who else is out there?
Some of the younger guys really haven't, like, you're not going to extend Trent Simpson, I would think. And you just look at some of their drafts in recent years, some of the guys that are, you know, nearing extension eligibility. I mean, Tavius Robinson, I mean, he's a solid role player. He's a guy you like to keep around, but I wouldn't know that you would prioritize that. I probably would still say it's Flowers. He's just still the most likely, he's still the most likely candidate with where they are at this point of the offseason. Actually, no. Lamar Jackson will get the next extension. Yeah. Chew on that, Cole.
There I like go. That one. That, well, but, I was going to say, you got to remember that.
How did I not write that out first?
I don't know. It's just you're fading. I guess you're podcasting too much.
Well, that's the understatement of the year for crying out loud.
That goes. No, all day, I right? was going to say to add on to that is the 2023 draft class was light. The Ravens only had 6 picks, which is almost unheard of with this franchise. They didn't have their second. I believe that's what they traded for Roquan Smith.
Yeah.
They had Zay Flowers, obviously, and then it was Simpson, Robinson, Caillou Blue Kelly, who's not on the team, Salah, who I don't know, might be flipping burgers at this point, and then Andrew Voorhees as the seventh rounder. Is Salah on an NFL roster?
He was on a practice squad last year, I think.
Good for him. Yeah, he's making more money than me.
Larry Money is here, Jeff.
Larry Money, do you really think the Ravens will use a first round pick and offensive guard center, given they just got screwed out of Linderbaum's 5th-year option due to the CBA? I don't think they're going to use a first round pick on a center, because I don't think there's going to be a center drafted within the first, you know, it was interesting, Cole. What's the, George from Pro Football Focus?
Gordon?
Gordon, my bad, George. Yeah. I'm out of my mind. He was saying he expects some centers to go on, you know, pretty early, definitely on day two. Yeah. I don't think Brugler has a single center with a grade in day one.
Unless you count Spencer Fano as a center, yeah, which, again, we just don't really know, yeah, right?
But, no, in answering the question, I don't think it's ideal, but this is a team in a win-now mode. If you get a Pro Bowl, a guy that you think is going to be a Pro Bowl guard for 3 of the 4 years, yeah, you don't get that extra year. So what? Sign him no contract extension ahead of time. That's how it works. That's what other teams do. So I think it's a consideration, and it's a very good question. But to me, that's not a deal breaker. If you have him clearly as the top player available, the best player on the board, the one that's going to make the most impact as a rookie, as you're trying to fix this offensive line that was a major issue in terms of them getting where they wanted to go last year, you take him, and you worry about that in a couple of years when he's eligible for a contract extension.
Larry, you know, thanks for the super chat. Appreciate the super chat there, Larry. We've got 3 new members tonight, guys, and counting: Zach Friedman, Diesel, and Nick Capecchi. We're going to get to Harris in just a second here, but first, let's talk about Prize Picks and also take a look at the inevitable. We did not perform very well, gentlemen, on Tuesday night.
That's because you guys did it, and I had no say.
You always have say. It's a 3-man show, you know?
Look at him. He's already suing his teammates. What is going on here?
Look at this. Well, when I went to look, lost. All in the red.
All
lost.
Three?
All three.
And remember, we thought I picked 3 easy layups.
We thought so. We took Curry with points, Jason with, meaning Tatum, with points, rebounds, and assists, and Shea.
Yeah, Shea only went for 25. That was, I literally said, quote, he's a walking 30, and I think he scored 25. You know what I didn't factor in? Some of these top teams, those guys, their top guys aren't playing full minutes. So, I mean, that's just bad analysis by me.
Well, luckily we got round 2 here, and we want to say thanks to Prize Picks, and I thought that was displaying on the screen the entire time, so let me just go ahead and show this to you real quick just in case you guys don't believe that we lost. We're in the red. We lost in all 3 categories. There you have it. Prizepicks.com. We're
pathetic.
Gonna be working with them for the next year. It's great to be working with them. We appreciate the partnership opportunity here, and how can we not, being that the first round at Augusta has now been completed. How can we not look at the PGA Tour, being that it's Masters week? So any dark horses that you guys like in terms of the individual golfing field here? There's Rory and Sam Burns fired opening 67. So they lead the field right now by 2. And there's a 3-way tie for second at 3-under with Kitayama, Day, and Reed. So anything stick out to you guys?
Never trust Sam Burns in a major. Never.
No, probably not.
No. Have you guys ever been to Augusta?
Oh, God, I have not. They wouldn't let me in there. Are you kidding?
It is it is magical.
Have you been?
Yeah. I did a father-son trip years ago. It was before I got married. It was either the first – The first one Bubba Watson won, or the second. I think he's a 2-time winner, but it was a year Bubba Watson won. It's just incredible. You know, like some of the, you know, the bloviating about Magnolia Lane, a tradition like no other. Like, I love Jim Nance, but God, those commercials have been run for 4 months before the Masters. So I was a little skeptical. I'm going to be honest.
Old man yells at cloud.
Yeah, exactly. Come on with this sentimental.
Who can trash on Jim Nance on Masters week? Come on.
No, but my point is, it's just a little much treat in how they treat the place and the language they use. It's just like, dude, give it a rest.
I found out today the grass is painted.
What do you mean? In certain places?
They put some dye on it to make it look. Is this a well-known fact and I'm the dumb one?
I did not know that. But
it's where there's imperfections, they spray it with like a synthetic spray.
But in finishing my thought, it is, the place is every bit as special as people say it is. Not Augusta, Georgia, but the golf course. It is just unreal. It really is. It was honestly the sporting highlight, I think. Of all the things I've been to, I think it was the most impressive sporting venue I've ever been to. Shane Lowry is a machine. He always finds himself on the leaderboard. I don't know if he finishes this, but that dude, man, it would be something if a year after Rory won, his best buddy Shane Lowry wins. Who else we got?
Well, here, as it relates to Shane, great Irishman, fun to watch. The guy has like four career aces, one of which is on the freaking 17th hole at the Players, which is awesome. Round two, 12:56, he hits the grass. That's his tee time. 72 and a half strokes, Jeff. You feel good about?
Oh, did that put it in the bank?
Okay.
The guys I feel good about, well, Rory, obviously, and I'm Ryder Cup is awesome, so I root for the American golfers. So I it kind of feels like blasphemy for me to back the internationals this week. But Justin Rose also, that dude is so consistent.
He just built for prime time too. Like he's just that guy that shows up. One guy that I'm gonna go with, and just looking at his card today, he netted four birdies, but he had two doubles, and I think he kind of sorts that out as Ludvig Åberg. I think he'll probably go less. I think he was at 70. Yeah, I think he breaks 70 tomorrow. I think he bounces back. And if I had to put another bounce back guy, I would actually, and again, he played terrible today, so maybe these are terrible bets, but I would bet on John Rahm. He went 6 over today. He looked terrible, but I can't help but think he bounces back. So, I mean, you guys might disagree on that one less than.
Well, it ain't hard to bounce. It ain't hard to bounce back from 7 over, for the love of God.
Yeah, he was 7 over and Bryson 76, 4 over. So I actually think he's going to plummet and not be around for the weekend. So I'm going to go. Are you guys cool with more for Bryson?
Yeah. Take Rahm off. Actually, that's a bad bet. 71 and a half. I thought his strokes would be higher.
All right. Let's take him out. Look, I think problem is these guys have been playing in Singapore and out in the friggin' Eastern Hemisphere the last few months on the LIV Tour. But
I like this for $20, 200. Those four picks, pretty good.
All right, okay, we feel good about that.
I do.
Okay, let's go ahead and submit this then. Again, Prize Picks, as you guys can see on the screen, or at least you will in a second here. And I'm gonna go ahead and submit our lineup. Make sure that that's good to go. We are submitted. And let's go ahead and throw up that offer once more so we can remind you guys, if you want to get involved with the program, involved with Prize Picks, there is that offer with the code HMA. You play $5, you get $50 instantly, and maybe you want to throw some cheddar on Masters weekend. Please do so responsibly. Back to Super Chats we go. Thanks to Prize Picks for the continued support of our program. And he was nice enough to leave a pronunciation guide at the end here. Harris could see, LOL. Harris says, guys, been watching for months and my first time catching this live. Jay-Z, happy birthday to your son. Wanted to ask, haven't heard much talk of trading back, but doesn't that seem like the best option in this draft?
Harris, thank you. The Masters thing reminds me, like we always say, my son is a Masters baby because, you know, I remember watching the Masters from the hospital as when he was born. And I think it was the year Patrick Reed won. So he's back on the leaderboard again. I can't root for Patrick Reed personally, but he did win the Masters. My son was born. I think trading back is a great idea in theory. And, you know, we react to Dane Brugler's The Beast. Like we do a reaction piece, and I did one for that. I'll run tomorrow morning. Like, where are going to be the sweet spots at the Ravens positions of needs? And based on Brugler's grades, but you look at it and a lot of the sweet spots are in the second and third round. There will be a run. Cole's pointed this out. There may only be one true guard that goes in the first round. I think the Texas A&M kid has a shot to sneak in the back of the first, but there's going to be a run on interior offensive linemen at some point on day two. There's three or four guards maybe that could go in second round. And you look at other positions, there always is a wide receiver, a cornerback run some point on day two. And why I'm saying this is if you get an extra pick at some point on day two, where maybe you get 2/3, right? And you move back in the first round and you come out of the first 2 days with four players and you expect maybe two or three of them to start, but all four to have big roles, because day one, day two draft picks should have big roles as rookies, then I think that's a way you can really plug some needs. So I love the idea about getting an additional day two pick. And you don't get an additional day two pick by trading sixth and seventh rounders like some of these couch GMs would have you to believe. But you're going to need to move back in the first round to do it. So I think it depends. But as we discussed here last week, somebody's got to come up and want the pick. There are often years where the phone doesn't ring when they're on the clock in the first round. And when the strength of the draft is kind of its depth and what's still going to be available on day two and early on day three, there may be teams reluctant to part with those picks because there's a lack of elite talent in this draft and a lot of contributors possibly, but maybe not a lot of frontline guys. So, yeah, I think the idea in theory sounds great. You just have to find a taker.
Yeah, well said, Jay-Z. I think one of the things that we're going to be hoping for is – who's going to slip, right? Someone always slips into the mid first round. Who's that going to be? And is it going to be a position that the Ravens want to attack? Or is that the target that someone's trading up for? So I think that needs to happen to even have this conversation. But the reality also is if someone does slip, like if it's a Francis Maligoa, just pick him. You know, the question becomes, what if it's Jeremiah Love? What do you do in that case?
You know what I'm doing.
I saw Brugler had him second on his big board.
Wow.
Heavy Dwayne praise.
Lucas. You know, the guy would be interesting, and we'll get to Dwayne Lucas's question in a second here. Bobby, I don't mind doing your job for a bit. You know what would be interesting? If Carnell Lake fell, or not Carnell Lake, Carnell Tate. Yeah, I'm thinking of the old Steelers safety. But if Tate, the receiver at Ohio State, fell. Now, I'm anti-first-round receiver, but I could make an exception.
Is this an addition to trading for A.J. Brown? Or what, no,
wait a second. I didn't advocate that. I just said I would not shock me. But, yeah, no, I wouldn't do both. But would you take Tate if he's there at 14?
It was funny. Right. So I know Jeff's tuned in on the premiere of every episode of Road Grader. So I'm assuming he watched on Monday when I did mock draft Monday. But I did it. I did the whole thing of like, I'm Eric DaCosta. Here's what I'd do. And it was Carnell Tate at 14. Cause my whole perspective was Eric DaCosta's approach to the NFL draft has been to take a BPA in the first round, whether it's at a position of need or not. And when I opened the PFF thing and it popped out, it was Carnell Tate. And I feel like Eric, based on his historical tendency, would do that and not care. Like, I felt that way about the Malachi Starks pick last year. It wasn't necessarily that they needed the safety. I think they felt he was the top guy on their board. So that's where they went in the first round. And and this isn't an Eric thing. I mean, Ozzie did it for years. So it's just a Ravens thing. So I do think if the BPA of their board is a wide receiver, I think they won't hesitate to pull that trigger.
Cole, if you worked at The Athletic, you'd have mock draft Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
The best employee you could ask for. He's all in. He's just all in.
Damn it, I love it.
Hey, in the spirit
of... what we're doing on Tuesday? Let's market. Let's do a mock draft, live mock draft battle.
So what do? We split the teams? We each take like 11 teams?
Or I think what would be the most entertaining for our listeners is we are the war room and we have to come to a decision collectively.
Yeah. We should do a
simulation. It's just going to be me and Jeff screaming at each other the whole time.
We definitely do a live simulation. I just did one today. You really put yourself under the microscope when you're doing it live because the chat's with you, obviously, and dissecting the hell out of you. And in the spirit of differentiation, because I've already done two. And the first time around, I went with Ioane. The second I went Sadiq, and I wanted to see how the board would unfold if I went with somebody who fell into my lap at 14 today, and it was Monroe Freeling. It really changed things for the way that the simulation started to be mocked. But I did go with Freeling. I got Ronnie's future replacement, the future franchise tackle, and I still got Lou on day two, but I didn't get a wide receiver, for example, until day three and the sixth.
Yeah.
I didn't even walk away with a guard. So that was kind of a problem. But
yeah, like we've talked about this before, guys. I'm not going to go too far into this because we'll get more into it. But there's going to be a couple positions that are get real hairy. You know, after day two of the draft, we're going to be saying, well, where's this? Where's this? Because they simply don't have this year. It just seems like they have more obvious needs than in past years. And there's, you know, like when we evaluate the draft after, you always put what you like, what you don't like, all that. There's going to be a couple positions where you just say, look, I don't think they did enough here, and I don't think they did enough there. They just simply don't have enough draft capital early on day one and day two to satisfy all those needs. But again, then after the day after the comp deadline ends on the Monday after the draft, they'll probably have already three deals in their back pocket. So they'll respond to that pretty quickly.
Let's cook through these super chats. But before we do, we are at 7,640 subscriptions. That means we are 60 out from hitting 7,700, getting closer to that 8,000 number. So if you find yourself watching tonight, you are not subscribed, we would love for you to do so. It is free, and it really helps grow this channel. Dwayne Lucas says, there's not a doubt in my mind that Zay could have a similar season to Jaxon Smith-Njigba, just needs the right system. And Diesel is here for you, Cole.
I knew this was coming. Okay, so Diesel, 4039. Cole, how jealous are you that Falele signed with the Giants? LOL. So let's do this. This is going to be the live funeral of Cole Jaxon talking about Daniel Falele. I will not do it anymore. I think Jeff's sick of it. I think the chat's starting to get sick of it. So let's make this. And I'm not going to lie, I kept doing it because there was always that chance in the back of my mind that they'd bring him back and compete with Emory Jones. But let's end it here. Let's take the high road and say good luck to Daniel Falele in New York. I'm not sure how John Harbaugh did it, but he obviously went into Joe Schoen's office and said, hey, how about two Evan Neals? And he was like, that's a great idea. And so now they'll have to deal with that. So, I mean, I talked to a couple of Giants guys when Harbaugh went there, and they kind of came back and they were trying to tell me that the film wasn't too bad. And I just said, you know what, guys, I wish you the best of luck, and tapped him on the shoulder. So good luck to them. I wish them all the best.
Can you imagine that Evan Neal Falele position competition come July and August? Whoa.
Who falls over the least?
We're going to be paying attention. I know that. Cole says it's his funeral. I get the sense that lie detector is going to be rolling right now. Ziad writes, we get a compensatory pick for Falele. Fub, breakout season, meaning Aeneas Peebles. Ziad, thank you. Where are we here? Diesel?
The contract details of Falele haven't come out yet, so I'm not sure. But they already have the full complement of comp pick. So if it factors, I can't imagine it would be anything that they haven't already covered. So I don't think, I haven't seen the contract, but I don't think it's going to be relevant in the comp pick scenario.
That brings us to Radioactive Toast 787. This one's for you, Jeff.
You really want me to answer this?
I didn't read it yet.
Jesus.
Okay. I'm sorry. Let me read this. Radioactive Toast says, hey, Jeff, this isn't based on anything in particular, but I'm wondering if you and Arbs ever had romantic getaways and interlocked fingers in the hot tub. Is that kind of thing common with insiders? I got caught here. I did not look ahead at Radioactive Toast's super chat. We appreciate
that. You guys are trying to get me fired.
And I was going to say, in the spirit of pleading the fifth, we will move on to Ziad 109's latest for you, Cole.
Is this about anything related? did Doyle confirm whether he's on the sideline or the box? Feel like one of the top six defensive prospects will fall to us and we take Bell or Hurst day 2-3. That's a question for Jeff. I don't think he said. I would assume he's going to be a sideline guy, but I think he was last year. Feel like one of the top six defensive prospects will fall to us and we take Bell or Hurst. I mean, yeah, it's definitely possible. I think you are going to see, in my opinion, a bit more of the devalued positions, quote unquote. I think you could see a couple safeties, like Downs and Thyneman, go before 14. I think you could see guards go before 14. I think Vagna could go, obviously. I think Fano could go, just kind of some of those devalued positions in the draft this week, and it might push down some of those guys. It might push down an edge rusher, or push down a tackle that could potentially play guard in year one. So I think it's going to be really interesting. But I do definitely, I like Chris Bell. if you're willing to live with the injury risk. And I think Ted Hurst is the skill set that they need as a big body guy that can get up and play the contested catch game.
I think one of the offensive linemen is going to fall. I just have a feeling. I don't know who it's going to be. Obviously, the kid from Miami went for a medical recheck today to check on his back. And Mike Garofalo from NFL Network reported it was cleared. So that's good news for him. But I don't know if it's going to be Fano or the Miami kid, or you just don't know. Freeling, as you said, Bobby, I think one of those guys is going to fall.
Well, Harris is like, yo, what if it's Sonny Styles? On the very off chance he falls because of positional devalue, do the Ravens take him? Oh boy, that would be a true test of BPA versus need, wouldn't it?
God, is he a good player though? Holy cow.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll learn a lot about Jesse Minter, and you know, but look, Roquan is last year with the Ravens.
So I was just going to say, so back to my simulation earlier, because it kind of relates to this. I actually took Jacob Rodriguez out of Texas Tech in the second round. He was far and away PFF's best player available. And with that in mind, Jeff, to your point, Roquan's future, not exactly locked in at this point beyond 26. That was sort of the vision that I had there, but it would be an embarrassment of riches in terms of just a crowded position group room that Jesse would have to get creative with. Tyler Santucci would have to get creative with in 26 if that were to happen.
Yeah, you know what? But what kind of shape is Buchanan's knee in, right? And Trenton Simpson's a free, one more year left. And I don't think he's an extension guy. You know, he'll probably want to go somewhere where he's going to play regularly and be featured regularly in defense. So, again, it's the classic. It's not in like a frontline knee now, but it's hard to dismiss the fact that they could use an inside linebacker. And, you know, I wish I knew the dude's name, but he's written me a good bit in terms of draft stuff about like, why isn't anyone talking about inside linebackers? This is a great inside linebacker draft. They're shaky there, right? Not knowing what Buchanan's going to be, Roquan likely on the downside, and Simpson a free agent. You know, you probably need to come out of the draft with one. I could only imagine the fan reaction if that one comes at 14.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I mean, Sonny, you can't argue with, but would you take CJ Allen there? Oh, no. It'd be such a tough sell. But I think one of the, you're right, though, one of the most under talked about thing, Jacob Rodriguez, Josiah Trotter, Anthony Hill, Bryce Botker from Oregon. Like, there's just, you can go deep. It's kind of what I said about center, right? Like, we're not just listing three or four guys. Like, you're listing six, seven. Red Murdoch is a guy from Buffalo that I know Brugler's been really high on. I think he's going to go probably late day two. He's a guy that I think could be the typical pick at 80 that will piss Ravens fans off until they get to see him play. That was kind of what Trent Simpson was that year. Everyone was like, seriously, a linebacker after you don't have a second round pick? But yeah, no, underrated need. I agree. Teddy got hurt pretty late in the year, and we've seen guys struggle to come back immediately after knee injuries.
Let's see. We had this up from Ziad. Nikes says Tyreek, calling for Tyreek Hill, who's available, but there is a major, major medical red flag there given the severity of his injury last year. Nick Capecchi is here, Sarah. Or, geez, goodness God. Jeff? Nick
Stay hot. You're on your game tonight, Bobby.
You got too many shows, man. I'm starting to come down with something, too. I'm sorry. Go ahead. It's Jeff from Nick Capecchi.
You probably haven't hit a happy hour in 48 hours and you're coming down with something. Nick Capecchi, Jeff, feeling any type of way about Baltimore flipping an early pick for a player? A.J. Brown, M. Wilson? Are we talking about the Cardinals wide receiver? What Wilson?
I would assume, yeah, Michael Wilson.
Michael Wilson? interior defensive line. Also, do you actually hate Bo Smoka? No, man. Bo is great. Bo is one of my favorite people. I just have a lot of fun with him. And I do get tired of his
incessant. Does he ever punch back?
I get tired of his incessant whining about everything. Like, dude, I am a world-class whiner, and I can't hold a candle to him. Like, the mid-majors and the NCAA and uncle. So sometimes I just have my fill, and I have to say something.
Let's not forget his going away tour. Yeah. Oh my God. I think it's still going. It went on for 18 months.
The last dance. The last dance.
The last stand with Bo.
But the flipping a pick, I said that on the show earlier this week, and we do so many, I forget when it was. But I think if there's an interior defensive lineman, a veteran out there that you might be able to get, and we talked about Dexter Lawrence, so I'm not necessarily envisioning a first round pick, but that's the position that worries me. I'd be more inclined in a position like that where I don't know that you're going to get an immediate impact player in this draft. And by impact, I'm talking about a guy you need, like an interior, guy who offers interior pass rush threat and holds his own against the run. If you want to get a run stopping, you can find one in this draft. But in terms of an impact interior defensive lineman, the area they need, they have enough nose tackles and run stuffers. But do you have that interior pass rusher? If you could get a veteran who is a 6 to 8 sack guy by trading a pick, yeah, I'd be all for it. I really would. Maybe it's, you also go the veteran receiver route. I don't know. But, yeah, this is the type of draft where I would strongly consider that.
Talked about it at length on Tuesday here. I mean, maybe both these scenarios are actually realistic. Diesel says Reader or Njoku, next free agent signing, or neither. I think we covered this on Tuesday night.
I'll make it quick, but Ms. Diesel's been laying out the been supportive tonight, so he deserves an answer to this. Reader's eligible for a comp pick, so they would not sign him before the Monday after the draft. So I could see him signed. If I was to bet on those two, I would bet Reader. Njoku, I still think, is an option. But if they are able to get a young tight end who they really like early in the draft, I think they would bypass signing Njoku. But they want to keep their options open by seeing what they're able to do in the draft in terms of adding a tight end before, you know, they necessarily commit to Njoku.
Diesel, appreciate that. Nick is back for more, Cole.
Also, Jay-Z, hoping you win a Pulitzer in your career. You are brilliant.
All What's I needed Jay-Z to do
stand for? What, who is he talking about?
All I needed to do was align myself with these two guys, and my star is on the rise. It's amazing. It took me whatever years of my career to really realize that.
How did we land?
I mean,
thank you, Nick. You're the man. A Bo Smoka question, a Pulitzer question. Well, two words that should never be used in the same sentence. In the same night. That's amazing.
You are on one. Devin says, Jeff,
oh God,
what about going back to Vegas, trading just the 14th for Max Crosby and revisiting that? What do you see consider?
I just want to quickly say, I can't believe we haven't gotten a Max Crosby question in the last 2 weeks. I'm in shock, and it's back.
Has he had a podcast in a while? No, seriously, it's like, has he been like, oh, that yeah. was what the reaction
Yeah, he was
like,
breaking down draft prospects. And we should see if he come on the show.
I don't think so, Devin. I think that ship has kind of sailed. I mean, the Raiders GM would get crushed if he suddenly turns around and says, hey, we'll take a first round pick now. Forget the other one. We'll take the first. And the Ravens would get crushed. Oh, now he fails. Now he passes his physical. Now you're not worried about his medicals when it's only one number one. I think that ship has sailed. It wouldn't shock me if Crosby gets traded, but I can't see that landing here. Plus the money they'd already have invested in Hendrickson.
Captain Jay Schaefer, what's going on? What are the chances that we draft two tight ends in the first four rounds? Cole, it's a deep class, so that's rich. But
if it was first five rounds, I'd probably agree with you. You know, having 4 5th round picks, I definitely could see that, and I think it'd be quite wise. And I would also put down Canadian currency. I'll have to up it a little bit to match the USD, but I would imagine the second tight end ends up being better than the first tight end draft because that's just the Ravens trend. But yes, I definitely in the first five rounds, I would expect probably two drafted. I don't think Durham Smythe was just a camp body or a guy that's just going to get, you know, cut. I think he'll be on the team, but I do think they'll probably go with four tight ends. And I do think there's certainly room for two. And I think David Njoku is one of those kind of plans if it doesn't shake out right with their board and they miss out on a second tight end. But I would imagine similar to 2022, they'll want to bring in two guys and develop them behind Mark Andrews.
What do you think the reaction would be, guys? Now, I had this talk with a couple of the Ravens beat writers. Fan reaction if they turn in the card for Sadiq at 14. I said I don't think people are going to be crazy about it. I was shouted down and told I think the fans would love it. It's a target for Lamar. Everyone's always complaining about, you know, Lamar not having enough targets. Here's a target for my Lamar. Here's another. You know, Lamar loves throwing those tight ends. They're getting him a piece. And this guy is, and people love the workout warriors too. And this guy's that. I don't know though, still. Knowing their history with being able to find tight ends in the mid to late rounds, and often the mid to late round guys being better than the first round guys, I don't know. I think the most astute Raven fan or the guy who follows the draft the most, not saying it's a bad pick or a good pick, but I think they'd be a little disappointed in that given their other needs. Just my opinion.
No, I think it's fair. I think the big thing for me is, and again, I'm kind of contradicting myself because I do think devalued positions will be pushed up in this draft. And I would count tight end, center, safety, like those types of positions, I think will get moved up maybe into the first round. And if they're first round talents, maybe a little bit higher than what you'd normally expect. I do think Sadiq will probably go in the first round. And people disagree with me, and that's fine. I don't see a first round player when I watch his tape. I think he just doesn't have the route running prowess that I'd like to see out of a first round tight end. Athletic as hell. The thing with him, and I'd throw Eli Stowers in that as well. They're both undersized, and that's not like that's based on the relative athletic score. They're both under 30th percentile for height and weight for tight end peers over the last. The database goes back to 1987. So you need a very specific plan for how to use those guys. And, you know, maybe Doyle has that and that's fair, but I just, with a deep tight end class, I don't know. I'd rather see them go to elsewhere where they've had success doing that. Where they haven't had a ton of success is going tight end early. You know, you remember Hayden Hurst and, you know, it just,
Max Williams wasn't exact. I mean,
he was a second rounder. I think he was 57th overall.
A lot of that was his injury, but he stuck around for a long time, but I don't think they got the bang for their buck on that one. You can't say this because you don't know who's going to be available, stick to the board, all that stuff, but third and fifth sound like good spots for tight end, or third and the sixth, like that kind of spread. To me, what the question was, I agree with you, Cole, that would be a little rich for me with taking two in the first four rounds or whatever.
Ziad with maybe the bomb of the night. He says Teddy's father versus Cole Jackson at WrestleMania.
I'm in. Sign me.
Let's see if that saga continues in the online Twitter sphere.
Yeah, what everybody's up to.
26. Yeah.
Be sure to hit that like button.
Hey, Jeff, on our way out here, since you had a front row seat to yesterday's media availability, any impressions of Kyle Hamilton's first impressions, just observing how Jesse Minter kind of has not minced words with, you know, what's been short of the expectation on that side of the ball over the last couple of years.
Yeah, the guys know it. You know, it's you, when you play defense, when you sign with the Ravens, there's a expectation on how defensive football is going to go and how you're going to play. And between the blown leads and getting blown off the field at times and not being at their best in the playoffs, the Ravens defense has fallen short of the standard. I don't think there's a single person in that building who would deny that. Jesse Minter knows a little bit about quality defensive football. I'm sure he's going to hammer down that point, make it clear, but I don't even think these guys need to be reminded of it. This is a proud group. Many of these guys have been on top defenses. Some of these guys were on the Mike McDonald Triple Crown defense. So, you know, when we talked about this earlier, but when you're going through the head coaching process and talking to people at the owners' meetings and various events about the Minter hire, most people around the league would tell you, like, they were going to hire a defensive coach. Like, it was an obvious, and Hamilton kind of said that too. Like, he said, I don't want to disrespect the process, but it felt like Minter was a shoe-in. And there just is a sense around the league is, look, you have Lamar Jackson. You're going to have a really good offense regardless of who your defensive offensive coordinator is. What you need is a kick-ass defense to complement Jackson. And so I think most people expected them to make defense, make a head coaching hire that that is kind of backed in defense like they did. And those guys got a lot to prove. There's still an awful lot of first-round picks, an awful lot of guys who are some of the highest paid in the league at their positions. They have enough of those guys on defense. You go into this draft, and yeah, there's defensive areas that you need depth in, but the only one that I think you have to come over, the only defensive position I think in this draft that they need to come away with a starter is interior defensive line. The rest of the group, I think, is more depth questions. Offense, meanwhile, you need a starting center, you need a starting guard, you need another starting caliber receiver, you need another starting caliber tight end. But defense should be well on its way. It has a lot to prove, and these guys know it. I don't think anybody other than the fans blamed Zach Orr for their issues last year. Now, I know, you know, I'm not saying he's blameless, but I'm just saying the players have said all along, this is on us. We didn't get the job done. And I'm sure that'll linger. And let's hope something changes with that group, because it's not been good enough when the chips are down.
Diesel gets us out of here with best bet. What does Lamar do wrong next that national media wants to pick on? It's been a very loud couple weeks in the national media side of things, especially when he showed up for the offseason program, which you would think would be the opposite, quiet. It got louder. And your best bet, who wins? And by the way, not everything has been negative. I saw a great monologue from Kyle Brandt on NFL Network today. Dominique Foxworth shared some good insights on GetUp earlier this week. So it's not all loud. I think just the negativity probably gets the most run. Everybody, best bet who wins the Masters, asking for a friend, and I'm done for the night. I'm going to go Tommy Fleetwood. What say you guys?
I got money on Xander Schauffele, so I'm going to stick with Xander Schauffele.
Jeff?
Justin, I think Rory's going to win, but that's too much of a chalk bet. I'll say Justin Rose wins.
Okay. Redemption then for Justin Rose. And if it is Rory, I believe he'll be just the fourth. It's between four and six players who have defended their title at Augusta. Of course, Jack's one of them. So, and did you guys see his tee shot today?
Yeah.
Jack Nicklaus. Yeah.
I love that.
When I went, we made sure we were out there at that time of the morning to watch the ceremonial tee shots. That's tremendous.
Did they let you tee one up, or
you don't want me to?
You would have hit one of the patrons.
Yeah, I'm not a golfer. I enjoy the sport, but I don't play it.
If the collective ends up in Copacabana for the Brazil week, we got to get a golf outing over there.
I don't know. This trip's going to bankrupt me at this point. Where else are you taking me?
I'm sure Bobby has connections.
We will find a way to.
A lot of people in his life.
That guy from the hotel is going to show up with drinks somehow.
We're going to put it all together. A nice partnership package for the collective. How about it? Yeah. All right, guys. The first two show per week format is done, and we'll be back next week. And, we're getting closer and closer to the draft. So
closer and closer to the draft, closer and closer to the uniform unveiling. Stop bearing the lead. 16.
That takes precedent. Thank you. Yeah. Next flight. The next flight takes.
Should we do a mock uniform unveiling? We can come out with our best mock-up design.
Right. Thursday's show is going to be a goddamn cinema. Are you kidding? So, and maybe, just maybe, we'll see how the weekend plays out and whatnot, and what we have planned, but maybe we do our simulation mock draft on Tuesday night. So we'll talk more as we always do. Thanks to Prize Picks for the continued support of the program. And thanks to all of you for spending some time with us. If you could, on the way out, you know the drill, like the video, subscribe if you haven't already, hit that notification bell, consider becoming a collective member and rejoining us when we're back on the air Tuesday night at 8:00 Eastern.